When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
BSM presents The Tim Meisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Meisberg Show.
And welcome back in. Hour number three of the program here on Monday morning. That means it is time to be turning on the light with Jack Spillane of New Bedford Light, which will fire up the Rolling Stones in just a moment. But Jack, before we do that, I got to ask you about a couple of things. One, first of all, you know, you live in the downtown area, so you don't have to travel to see fireworks if you want to see them. But did you get a chance to see them on the 4th of July?
You know, I hardly ever get to see the fireworks because my family is all down the Cape. And the 4th of July is our big family get-together, and it's a large family. So I'm always seeing the Oyster Harbor fireworks instead of the New Bedford fireworks. But I know that last year or so, fog prevented seeing them. And so I'm not sure what happened this year. But
well, I was going to bring up what happened in Marion last night. So they were supposed to happen Saturday in Marion. They postponed them till Sunday because of the weather. And then last night, you know, they had to let them, they had to fire them off yesterday, no matter what, I guess. And so they still had the show, but instead of having it at 9 like they were supposed to, they had them at 8. And I guess the fog was still pretty thick at 8 and it was still kind of light out.
Still light.
And if they had waited till 9, the fog would have dissipated a little bit more and people would have at least been able to see them a little bit better in the dark. DSY says they went there, they got there at 8:45 and they saw some people moving around, but not a lot. So they asked the cop what was going on and they said that the fireworks had gone off at 8. So they didn't even get the word out to people that they were setting them off early.
It sounds to me like there might have been like a scheduling thing since they had to delay a day. Maybe the company was doing more than one town and they couldn't get there because there's really no reason to set off fireworks at 8 o'clock in July when it's still light.
Yeah, I mean, granted, the weather wasn't the best, but it was still, it wasn't like it was a dark sky. But anyway, this is why I don't bother going to fireworks. Just too much hassle for what? For something I've seen a million times.
I love fireworks. If they're near where I am, I always go to them. Although I have to say, the New Year's Day, they weren't fireworks. They were just like light displays that they had this year, LED displays, were pretty cool in New Bedford.
So the other part of it is, I guess, you know, as people are celebrating their 4th of July, they have a tendency to make that celebration go all month long and set off their own fireworks the weekend before, the day after, the weekend after, and for weeks and weeks after that. Do you get a lot of that where you live? Do you have a lot of people setting off fireworks?
Some years, not this year, but some years we do. My attitude about that is that fireworks are not for amateurs. Like too many stories of people who have injured themselves, sometimes permanently, by setting off fireworks when they don't know what they're doing. So fireworks, leave it to the professionals, is my opinion.
So there's also, we're gonna turn on the light here in just a moment, but there's one other thing that I want to bring up to you that's kind of outside of the realm of the area. And there's a story today from WCVB about the plans for the Pheasant Lane Mall in Nashua, New Hampshire. They lost the Sears anchor store years ago, and nothing's come in to fill the space, and that's actually going to become a casino. And so I'd ask the question of, I know, you know, logistically there can't be another casino that close to the one that's in Tiverton, but would you be opposed to there being a casino in the Dartmouth Mall if that became something that was possible? It seems weird to me to have a casino in the mall.
Yeah, when I first heard this story, I heard you talking about it this morning. I thought, jeepers, if it was in the mall, would I be tempted to go over there? And the answer is yes. So,
like you'd be sitting at home and being like, oh,
well,
just go to the casino.
I was in the mall for some reason, which is not very often, but if I was in there, I probably would go into the casino and see what's going on at least. Maybe, you know, bring some quarters or whatever. I guess you pay for the tokens and you put the tokens in. But I don't have any great heartburn about it. I was asked over the holiday about what's happening with the Mashpees because, as we know, they have finally succeeded under a Democratic administration of having the federal government take their land into trust, which was held up while Trump was a president, as far as I understood. So the Mashpees now are a recognized tribe. But what has happened to the casino in Taunton? And my understanding is that the Mashpees are have some level of business arrangement with a Malaysian group that is not favorable to them. I'm not sure whether they're in debt or what. And now the casinos in Everett and Springfield are not doing that well.
Right.
Particularly the one in Springfield. And Plainville has asked to upgrade from just slots to a casino. So whether that one in Taunton could ever go in, it's so ironic because the Mashpees had the land. They wanted to build there, and then they couldn't because they weren't recognized as a tribe. And now they are recognized as a tribe. The group that in Taunton that's fighting them, I guess on the Taunton Rainham line, may be appealing this decision, but it seemed to be final from what I heard. But that the economics of whether a casino would work in southeastern Massachusetts were not clear anymore. So
the mall site is, you know, was off the table because FedEx was going to be putting in a distribution center there, and now that deal fell through. So
yeah,
it's still
in play.
It wasn't
the mall where they planned to build it. It was across from the mall.
Right, but that whole area was going to be the FedEx area, but now that's no longer happening.
Yeah.
And now they put the train station over in that area.
Yeah.
So, listen,
Does the tribe still control the land?
No, I think they sold that land.
Did they?
Because they couldn't do anything with it. I'm not totally sure, but I think that's what happened. But you had mentioned, you know, the fact that Encore is not doing well in Everett, but there's some talk that whoever purchases the Celtics could be working out a deal to build an arena over there. And maybe that changes the fortunes a little bit over in that area.
Yeah, that makes sense to me to build an arena. There's also been talk about a New England Revolution soccer stadium in that area. Those are things that no one has ever solved. They haven't solved the soccer stadium, the need for it. Soccer is popular with folks who live in the city, so it makes sense to build it close to Boston as opposed to out in Foxborough. The other thing is the WNBA has never come to Boston, and people think the reason is because there's no place for them to play. It seems like a natural that women's basketball would be popular in Boston. I know we have the Mohegan Sun, but it is a ways to get down to Connecticut.
I don't understand why they haven't used the Aganis Arena for a WNBA team.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think that would be you know, exactly the capacity that we need.
But you have to think if the Celtics went in there, they probably would try to work out a deal with the WNBA.
Certainly, because you wouldn't be, you know, competing with Delaware North anymore for the things that they're booking for the TD Garden.
Also, it's a revenue stream. Okay.
We can talk some more about that, but let's actually turn on the light here. Let me cue up the Rolling Stones. We're contractually obligated to give Mick and Keith their...
Could I think, get high?
thinking this morning as I listened to, I'm not sure exactly how old Mick is now, 80, 81. He's certainly the same age as the president, and the president seems to be failing a little bit, but Mick is out there.
If only he was a natural-born citizen, we could have him run. But unfortunately, he's ineligible. So, well, do you want to discuss the national scene at all? I mean, that's sure. That's been a major topic of conversation for the past week or so following the debate. What do you think about what's going on with the Democrats and the fact that there are prominent voices in the Democrat Party that are asking for Joe Biden to step aside?
Yeah, I agree with those voices. I think he's too old. I think virtually anybody in their 80s is too old. I think Trump is on the verge of being too old and probably will be too old if he's elected when his term will be over. I'm 71 myself. The fact is you're just not as fast and on top of things. Last week, the president was saying that he's not so good after 8 o'clock. Well, that's not so much of a problem for a normal 81-year-old man, but it is a problem, I think, if you're president of the United States, if you're not so good after 8 o'clock.
It's not like, global disasters and things like that are going to wait for you to get up in the morning to deal with
it. Yeah, so I think, like any political party, the Republicans have had this where they initially tried to resist Trump and his supporters were just too strong. I think the same dynamic is going on in the Democratic Party now where it's clear that people who know think that he's really not up to the job, just as some people thought that and think that Trump was not morally up to the job. But getting rid of him when he controls the party infrastructure is not going to be easy. And so it's going to be bloody whatever happens. And I think that Democratic leaders who knew that he was having these struggles, not to say that he's completely out of it, I don't think he is, but that he was having these struggles and did not go to him earlier, I think there's some accountability for them. Just as, to be fair, I think there's some accountability to the Republican leaders who, did not impeach Trump that second time, and make it clear that they did not want him to lead the Republican Party.
But is changing candidates and pivoting away from an incumbent president, is that, pretty much conceding the election? Do you think somebody can come in this late and beat Donald Trump?
No, I think they could. Kamala Harris is polling higher than Biden right now after the debate. You have some strong candidates in Governor Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan, who not only won in Michigan, but she took the House and Senate in Michigan with her. Governor Gavin Newsom in California. There's any number of people, I think, that would have the ability to make the case about why Trump is problematic better than Joe Biden seems to be able to articulate it now. I mean, I think he can do it, as we've seen over the past week, if he's reading from a teleprompter, but can he do it? And the guy has always stuttered and struggled coherently expressing himself. So how much worse this is now, I don't know, but it's bad.
Well, if you're a stutterer, and there's work involved. It's not like you lose the stutter. You find ways to overcome the stutter. And as you get older, you're just not going to be as quick with those anymore. And so I've seen plenty of stutterers who have gone back to stuttering as they got older. I don't think that it means that you are mentally deficient. It just means that you are no longer covering up the stutter.
Yeah, but it was more than just a stutter.
Right,
in that debate.
Blanking out.
He said things like, we beat Medicare.
Right.
We finally beat Medicare. What the heck was that about?
I don't know. The whole idea of it was one bad night, I think doesn't really make anybody feel any better.
I mean, just the man's gait, the way his mouth was agape. He just had that look of an old man.
Well, my mouth was agape during most of that debate when Trump was talking too.
Well, I don't know.
Like, I can't believe you're saying that.
I don't know if I was going to be, recommending you for president of the United States.
I would not. But the, it's funny because I keep hearing people saying, well, the Democrats aren't going to put out a Harris Newsom ticket because it's against the Constitution. They're both from the same state. But yet people are saying that Trump's VP candidate will be Marco Rubio, and they're both from the same state. So
Yeah, that kind of problem is solvable easy enough. You just have one of them move to another state.
Right.
I mean, on paper, move to another
right.
state.
And in that case, you know, I saw on CNN, Dana Bash was asking Rubio, you know, would you be willing to give up your Senate seat and move to another state if he picks you as the VP? And he was like, you know, this is, you know, hypotheticals. Nothing's been decided. But I was like, wouldn't it just be easier for Trump to just change himself to one of his many other homes as where he lives?
Yeah. Although I'm not sure he can go back to New York that easily because he's had some legal troubles there.
Yeah, it doesn't matter though. You can still register to vote there. I don't know. But anyway, we can talk
he's
some more
lucky
about
to stay out of jail in New York, right?
It's not like
the sentencing that has already been delayed in the
it's not like he's a fugitive. He just hasn't been sentenced yet. Yeah. So of course the big news locally this week was the passing of former Bristol County District Attorney Paul Walsh, a guy who, again, I didn't really know him that well personally, but of course, hearing Chris talk about him and reading a lot of the tributes to him, it seems like he was a real everyman in what he did for Bristol County.
Yeah, Paul Walsh Jr. was a charming, just a delightful man to talk to and to know. I didn't always agree with him politically, but I will say this. He was a stand-up guy who did his own press, unlike the current mayor, for instance, unlike members of the current legislative delegation who don't return calls. Whatever tough stories I ever had on Paul Walsh, he always made the call back himself, not one of these guys having his PR person call or a secretary call and saying, hold for District Attorney Walsh, that kind of thing. Paul Walsh always talked to you himself. You know, sometimes he didn't. If he didn't like a question, or you know, he was very adept at not answering by just saying, no, I don't agree with that, and not giving you any details. So I often didn't. It was very hard to, for me as a political columnist, to lay a glove on him, like, you know, because he was just a very sharp politician. He did lose that election to Sam Sutter, who I don't think was as good as him. He had some, I think there were some people, there were people who disagree with the way he administrated criminal justice in the county. He was reelected though many times before he finally lost. Whatever you want to say, it's just a real loss to the region for his passing at such a young age. I'm embarrassed to say he's actually younger than me.
It also seems, and you know, in reading a lot about what went on, you know, he was elected because people didn't like the job that Ron Pina was doing toward the end there, and certainly, you know, having high profile cases that went unsolved were an issue, and Paul Walsh came in and he was able to take care of some of that, and then he faced issues at the end of his time, or there were cases that, you know, Sam Sutter was able to bring up in that campaign and use to his benefit. So I guess no district attorney gets away unscathed because not every case is going to be solved to the public satisfaction.
Well, the big case, of course, was the highway killings.
Mm-hmm.
And D.A. Pina was not able to solve those. And ultimately, D.A. Walsh was not able to solve those. They still remain unsolved today, despite Maureen Boyle's great book. I don't know whether everybody who knows is dead or whether somebody out there knows, but that's, you know, I think one of the big things that has bothered people in Bristol County, that those killings have never been solved. There were other issues, you know, in terms of the administrative justice being fair and your philosophy of justice when it comes to some crimes that tend to affect the minority communities more than other communities, and whether we are putting people, and these are national issues, you know, putting people in jail for low-level drug crimes and things like that. But, you know, whatever your political philosophy, I think Paul Walsh was a nice guy, a delightful person to know, and a guy who returned his own phone calls, which counts for a lot.
Right. There's something to be said for somebody who will answer the questions, even if they don't want to answer the questions.
That's right.
And I always found that, you know, that in doing what we do here, you know, that actually means more to me than somebody just saying, you know, no comment.
Yeah.
like somebody that's willing to listen and say, yeah, you know what, I don't want to, I'd rather hear you say, I don't want to answer that than say no comment.
Or just doesn't even return phone calls. Just right. when it's a difficult question, just takes a pass.
Yeah. I mean, there's been plenty of times. There's a lot of things I'm still waiting to hear back on from different things for different people. We got to take a break here, but if you want to call in and talk with Jack Spillane, 508-996-0500. You can also send app chat messages on the WBSM app. We'll be back in just a few moments. Back. We are turning on the light with Jack Spillane, and in about a minute, we're going to go into the newsroom and get an update from Phil. But as I was saying, Jack, there's a lot of stuff that's going on this summer, and a lot of things are happening. This week is the Wailing City Festival. Is that something that you go and check out?
So Wailing City Festival is something that I used to go to when I first got here 25 years ago. I can't say that I go every year. I think it's something, if you have children or grandchildren, that's the place you want to be. There's no place better for rides and all. It's a beautiful setting.
So what you're saying is you don't go just to see the pro wrestling.
It's a carnival.
You don't want to just see wrestling happening?
You know, I actually like college wrestling and Olympic wrestling.
Not quite the same.
Not quite the same.
There's also a wrestling event happening Sunday at Cisco. So it's going to be happening. It's going to be, not only is it going to be some wrestling, it's Teddy Goods, the guy that co-owns Kojo's Toy World in downtown New Bedford there. And so his wrestling group is putting on a big event there. They have Tommy Dreamer, who's an ECW legend, coming in. And also All Sinners is going to be playing, the band that was formed by Roger Schwenard, the guy that owns Purchase Street Records. So
wrestling at Cisco, now that seems like an oxymoron. But
wrestling outdoors by the ocean is beautiful.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm going to try to get down there for that one for sure. Hopefully. We'll see you guys down at some of those. Right now, though, it's time to go into the newsroom. Phil's giving me that look. So let's go into the newsroom with Phil Devitt.
Hurricane Beryl makes landfall in Texas. Boeing will plead guilty to criminal fraud. And another animated film tops the box office.
From the WBSM newsroom, this is WBSM News.
Hurricane Beryl is battering Texas. The storm made landfall this morning, packing maximum sustained winds of 80 miles per hour, nearly a foot of rain in some places, tornadoes a risk, and more than 300,000 people without power. More outages expected as the Category 1 storm moves inland, and hundreds of flights into and out of Houston are canceled or delayed today. Several House Democrats have told House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries that President Biden needs to bow out of the 2024 race. Mark Mayfield reports.
During a Sunday call, at least four senior House Democrats said privately Biden should drop out, joining another five House members who have called on Biden to withdraw. A source familiar with Democratic Senator Mark Warner said that the similar private meeting that he was trying to organize for Monday with other senators is no longer taking place. I'm Mark Mayfield.
Boeing will plead guilty to criminal fraud over two fatal 737 MAX airplane crashes, one in 2018 and one in 2019. The Justice Department said Sunday the aircraft maker violated a 2021 settlement that protected the company from prosecution. Boeing also agreed to pay a $243 million fine. An independent compliance monitor will oversee the company for 3 years. The company will also have to invest more than $450 million for safety and compliance programs. A year-long NASA Mars mission simulation has come to an end. Tammy Trujillo with the details.
The four volunteers who took part in the project exited their sealed habitat at the Johnson Space Center in Houston on Saturday. They spent a total of 378 days living and working inside a 3D printed habitat dubbed Mars Dune Alpha. NASA will be using their experiences to plan for crewed missions to the Red Planet, which it hopes to begin launching in the late 2030s or early 40s. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
The U.S. Postal Service is raising the price of forever stamps later this month. Stamps will sell for 73 cents beginning July 14th, up a nickel from the current price. Other postage costs are going up too, including postcard and metered letter rates. The increases are part of a decade-long financial outline the Postal Service is calling the Delivering for America plan. And Despicable Me 4 is soaring to the top of the box office. Illumination's latest sequel in their hit animated franchise released on Wednesday, pulling in $122.6 million over the holiday weekend. Hotly anticipated Pixar sequel Inside Out 2 finished second with $30 million, and A Quiet Place Day 1 placed third with an estimated total of $21 million.
WBSM Sports.
The Red Sox beat the Yankees 3-0. They next host the Oakland Athletics for a three-game series that begins tomorrow night at Fenway Park.
Now, your ABC 6 South Coast forecast, brought to you by C Street.
We're coming out of the clouds into another sunny, hot, and humid day on the South Coast. With the day comes a high of 91 degrees. Tonight, a low of 73 degrees. Tuesday, hot again, a high of 88. In fact, we're looking at high temperatures and high humidity all week long. I'm Phil Devitt for WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's news talk station, WBSM, and get all of our content and breaking news alerts with the WBSM app.
And welcome back in. We are turning on the light with Jack Spillane of New Bedford Light. And, you know, we were just talking off the air about how, like, the news business has changed a little bit and the way that people consume their news has changed a little bit. And we were talking about TikTok and about, you know, would you have ever thought, you know, 20 years ago is, or maybe even 25, 30 years ago, as journalism was starting to make this transition into digital, that we would have this type of news media that we have now, where you can get things in little 60-second videos, where you can get things in alerts that are instantly sent to a phone that's in your pocket all the time? I mean, it's really changed the game.
It's changed everything. And not only would I not have thought that TikTok or Facebook or Instagram, for that matter, would be major purveyors of news, but that the people making the news would be amateur people in their living room, you know, just, you know, I don't know, with their own unvetted take on what was happening, and that, because it's opinion, you know, commentary, which is what I do in a more formal way, more than it is news, but that would be the main way that people would be receiving their news. And it's changed everything. I don't profess to entirely understand it, but it's a different world out there. There are people now who only get their news from TikTok and Instagram, and that they never, ever would be listening to mainstream television, cable television, or AM talk radio. They just wouldn't.
Well, there's people who say, oh, the news bores me. I don't watch the news. I don't listen to the news. It bores me. But then they don't realize they're getting news through these social media.
Also, if the news bores you, then people who may not be up to good purposes may take over your life and tell you what you can do and can't do because the news bores you. You know, I don't know. To my mind, we've already seen that with abortion. It may be just the first thing, but you know, the people who are setting the agenda are the people who are interested in news, and the people who are not interested in it, you know, who in days gone by when you had three television stations, ABC, CBS, and NBC, and they all did the news at the same time at 6 o'clock in the evening, everybody listened to it. And so everybody had a common, even if you didn't really care about news, you kind of had to listen to it if you were attending to media. Now there's just so many options that you never, ever have to listen to news. But that doesn't mean the news doesn't affect you. It doesn't mean that the decisions that are made by others whom you have opted out from, you know, and people say, well, I don't care about those social issues, but there must be something you care about, whether it's taxes or the motor vehicle laws or housing, whatever the issue is, that is going to affect you because you've opted out. But that's the world we're in.
One of the things that I've noticed has been a big change, and this has come up this morning a little bit, is verification. So, you know, there were some incidents that happened last night and the night before in New Bedford that we have a request into the police for more information and verification of. And because New Bedford Live is down there going live on Facebook from the scene, and we aren't there. Like, people don't understand, like, we have to report what we can report. If we weren't there to see it and we don't know what's going on, we have to confirm the details with the police department.
Yeah. Now, you may, if it was a credible source, like if it was the Standard Times even or the New Bedford Light, you might be willing to quote them in a fix if you couldn't get them because you know that they're reputable news organizations. You're not going to quote something that's unvetted by and I don't know how else to say this, but non-professional journalists, you're not going to be as likely to use that. The other thing is, in days gone by, you would have been at the scene. WBSM would have had enough of a staff to be there.
Right.
You know, the Standard Times would have had enough of a staff to be there. The New Bedford Light doesn't quite do that yet. We hope we will someday. But so it's, a different world out there, because even though the traditional journalists are not there to do it and do it in a responsible way that quotes, you know, official sources and all, now you have non-professional journalists who are on the scene and have the ability to put it up. They're their own publishing company. They just put it up on their phone and that's it. And none of it is vetted. It has changed the way people feel about everything, the way people are cynical about what they hear. You know, the old Marvin Gaye, people believe half of what you see and none of what you hear. It's a different world.
You know, somebody can be, you know, an internet journalist, an internet person can be down there on the scene and put out information and maybe they get like something wrong. So maybe they say it was, you know, 10 people involved and it was only 8 people involved. And then somebody looks at that later on and says, well, they said that it was 10, but it only turned out to be 8, but that's okay because they're there in the moment. People give them a pass for that kind of stuff. You know, they don't give media like us a pass for something like that if we make a mistake like that. That's why we have to verify everything first.
And that's a small mistake. There were 10 people versus 8 people. But if they say it was a shooting and it was a stabbing, that's a big mistake. And so, you know.
But again, even mistakes like that, it doesn't really hurt the credibility of what it is that they do, whereas it would kill the credibility of a outlet like WBSM or New Bedford Light.
But I think it does hurt the credibility of people's confidence in news in general, because people think they don't know what to believe and conspiracy theories develop. And so I think that this will sort itself out over the next 10 years or so. But we are right now in this whole world of unvetted journalism, and it's having an effect.
I can tell you that this is why I like to write stories that are, you know, nice human interest feature story pieces as opposed to the hard news. I try to get out of the hard news, and I can't because there's just too much news and we don't have a big enough staff.
Well, I'm almost totally a hard news guy. So I do a good bit of arts coverage.
I find, though, that you have a good balance, though, of being able to, you even when you're presenting something that's news, you're presenting it in a way that gives it that feature story feel. You know, I would say you're more of a magazine writer.
Yes.
For a, you know, I guess a weekly publication.
Yeah, very much so. And it's kind of something I just developed on its own because there aren't that many people that do that at the local level. When I was in New Hampshire, there was a reporter I admired who did that. And I sort of learned from him. And so I think that kind of commentary, reflective, you know, long form journalism is something that I've developed, and you know, I've been lucky enough to work for editors that liked it and let me do it. But again, I've been in the news business for 40 plus years. And so I know what the standards are. I know, you know, what good reporting is.
I was thinking about this last week because the week before they had the Zeitarian groundbreaking and Ariel went to cover it, but I also went to go and be part of it. But I was there on a media pass. And then I saw Peter Pereira there. I saw Arthur Hirsch there. I saw Frank Mulligan there. And I was thinking, like, this is probably the most media coverage something's had around here in a while. And then the next day, the Tavares Street dedication, you know, Phil Devitt was there. I'm sure the paper had somebody. I'm sure New Bedford Light. So you've got, you know, these were a couple of things where I was like, it's kind of sad that these are it's great. These are great things and we should be celebrating them. But this is what brought out enough media to cover it.
Yeah. And in the case of New Bedford Light, some of those things we go to, but we don't write a turnaround story. Mm-hmm. We use that information in a longer, in-depth explanatory story, but we don't cover it as a news event.
Right.
The way that traditional newspapers would have.
Let's take a call here. Good morning. You're on with Jack Spillane.
Hey, Tim and Jack. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Good.
You know, I think journalism standards have always been really high up to a point. I can't really pin down when, but do you think that with the perceived biases from the, I don't want to say mainstream media, but media in general, the professionals like you, that when biases were perceived, that people started to look for other sources, even if they weren't as vetted or accurate, to get their own news because they were, gradually not trusting what was coming across their TV every day or their, not necessarily newspapers, more TV than anything else. But, it was definitely, I mean, I took journalism class, but I'm not a I'm never a journalist, but it was pretty easy for me to see that editorial standards were changing, you know, based on, you know, click for money. So stories and things would change to get more clicks for money, or, you know, how they handled the Trump thing, for instance, whether you like Trump or not, you know, he changed how some of these main media sources were, or companies were handling news. I mean, so I don't know. I think that there was a little bit that the industry did it to itself, but there's obviously new media, like you're mentioning. So I don't know. What are your thoughts?
So I would make a distinction. I think that you're correct that mainstream media has always been left-leaning. You know, I'm a part of it, and I would acknowledge that. I think those are the perspectives of what's news and what isn't news of people who are more progressive in their philosophy. But I think the rise of Fox News and AON and other cable stations responded to that, and they cover things from a more conservative perspective. But that's not what's going on now. What's going on now is beyond Fox, because Fox, whatever you want to call it, is still a traditional means of delivering media with professional journalists. What's going on now is everybody is a journalist. Everybody has a cell phone, and they're putting things up on TikTok and Instagram and Facebook in a almost a casual way. Just oh, I was down the street and this happened, and I think I saw that. And okay, you say, well, no one's going to take that seriously. But TikTok and Facebook and Instagram are such powerful delivery vehicles. They go to everybody the way that the old mainstream television stations before the rise of cable news went to everybody. And so they have a far greater reach, certainly, than any community journalism. And the viewership of CNN and Fox and MSNBC are tiny compared to the old broadcast station, and tiny compared to TikTok and Facebook.
I think your assessment, Steve, was right about in terms of the way that, you know, you're talking about savvy news viewers already. People who were already kind of plugged into this didn't like what they were seeing and went to find something else. But I think the other part of this is there's been a rise in, you don't need to find unbiased news coverage anymore. You can find somebody that agrees with what it is that you already agree with. And I think that's where some of this citizen journalism on social media came about, because, and it really, I can trace it back to people who were just sitting at home with the scanner on, who would hear something on the scanner, would put it up on social media, and then the police would come back and say that it was something different than what was on the scanner. And so they didn't trust anymore what we were reporting because, well, that's not what I heard on the scanner. So that led to these folks who were scanner riders just going out there and finding this out for themselves, because there was that. Now, what they don't realize is the reason why it wasn't out there is because what comes across the scanner is just the initial call. Nobody's investigated that yet. Nobody's actually vetted it yet.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I think that the rise of...
I was going to say, you're pointing out is all point in time, you know, coverage. So you're getting someone's camera video of something, but the vetting and the real reporting is going in and getting all of the story around it and putting it in, framing it up and putting it in perspective so you actually have the full story versus, you know, I saw someone, hit someone with their car. That, you know, was someone in the car? Was there, you know, you don't know. You just get, and like you said, Jack, it goes around the world and, you know, 100 million viewers in no time at all if it's exciting enough, but that's, you know, anyway.
And then by the time WBSM gets to it, WBSM is no different than any other station. It's a far smaller audience than what goes around the world on social media. And don't get me wrong, I support citizen journalists doing what they're doing. It's just in its infancy, and there are very few standards right now.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, you guys have a great day.
You as well. Take care. And now we do got to take a break, but we can take some more calls. 508-996-0500. We will be right back. you'll get the hang of it again. It's like riding a bicycle. If that bicycle was going out to thousands of people watching you all at once, ride
exactly.
That bicycle. That's not a big deal. And you know what I find too, Jack? I listen when you're filling in for me if I can, and I find the audience is way more forgiving of you than they are.
Oh,
me.
They are. So. They're very nice to me. It's true. I think it's sort of like, you know, when you see a little old lady cross the street, you want to help her.
I think you will do a great job, and people will enjoy the conversations. You always bring good topics and good guests and good discussion. So looking forward to that. And, of course, I'll be in the car driving for hours and hours and hours and hours, so I'll be able to catch up on the podcast. It's going to be, I think it's like an eight-hour drive.
Wow.
I think it took like 8 hours last time. So it's Gettysburg is not easy to get to, yeah. Especially when you're driving.
Yeah, my brother and I are planning a trip on Gettysburg eventually, but...
When you do, let me know, because I will hook you up with my friend that lives there who's a tour guide, and she'll give you the, you know, behind-the-scenes tour that most people don't get. So it's a fascinating place. If you've never been, I absolutely recommend it. Jack, I know that I usually ask you what you've got going on, and you usually don't want to reveal too much, but I just wanted to, you know, check and see if you've got something that you want to talk about.
Yeah, I think I'll keep my cards close to the vest again today. I am working on something. It's a little bit, you know, it used to be every week I'd come, and most weeks I would have something, but now I'm only writing twice a month, so I don't always have something. But I do have something I'm working on, and hopefully it'll be a good one. I'll say this much. It's a timely news topic. I go back to hard news this week after my sojourn into statues and things like that.
So we can look forward to that coming this week?
Yes.
All right. See, that's I really just want to give you the chance to promote that it's coming this week. It does. You don't have to say what it is. Why don't we take our final break here really quickly, and then we'll wrap up. If you want to call in, 508-996-0500. We will be right back. All right. We are back. Jack, I wanted to ask you really quick. I know we only have about 2 minutes here, but Anastasia Lennon had a nice follow-up to the Jacob Pothier story about how the state lags in prosecuting students. Protecting students, rather, from sex abuse. And it really is astounding how much, and if you read this piece, you can read for yourself, how much the legislature hasn't done anything about this.
Yeah, that, I think, is the most disheartening story that we've done in the last month or so. Anastasia Lennon's great story in the Jacob Pothier case, both on the situation of Folk Tech where, you know, again, it's not easy. A lot of people knew, but did they really know exactly what was happening? But also, the legislature, since 2016, not bringing forth closing this loophole that allows a staff member to have a relationship with a 16-year-old. Both Chris Markey and Chris Hendricks are on the Judiciary Committee, and so it'll be interesting to hear from them as to what is holding up the Massachusetts legislature in closing this loophole. You know, I think there is some concern about like a 16-year-old, not a 16-year-old, an 18-year-old staff member in a relationship with a 16-year-old student versus a adult having a relationship, but it should have been closed a long time ago, and the Pothier family has every reason to be outraged at what's happened.
So you can check that out at newbedfordlight.org, and that's where you'll find Jack's column later on this week as well. Stay tuned for South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. He's going to be taking you all the way through until noon. Then we'll have Bill O'Reilly, and then Barry Richard is back today.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.